days, I wish I could be a parent back when we was all kids, because you didn't worry about stuff back then. Like, on Halloween night, when you were a little kid, how many of y'all went out with district buddies for like 5 or 6 hours? Yeah. You didn't x-ray your candy. You were eating it before it hit the bottom of the sack. Just, needle, don't want that. How many of y'all rode in the car seat when you was a kid? Nobody. Car going 75 miles an hour, what are we doing? Jumping on the front seat. Go, Daddy. Go, Daddy. We didn't have airbags. That was your dad's arm. That was your airbag. We had metal dashboards. You just learned how to take a fall back then, man. We had a big old Chrysler Imperial. I'll never forget that car. Anybody ever do this to your little kid? Climb up in that backseat window dash? Laying there picking your nose, looking at the cop? That Mack truck would come up from behind. You'd be going like that. He'd honk his horn. Your dad would flip him off. Now he's trying to run you off the road. And seatbelts, hell, my dad used to cut him out of the car. That was the best time of your life when he slammed on the brakes. You flew out of that backseat window, man. You were like, that was cool, Dad. Wait, let me get back up there. Wait. And it's hard to be a parent. I never thought I'd ever say that, but it is hard to be a parent. There's a lot of little things nobody tells you about being a parent. Like nobody told me you couldn't pass gas around your kids. But you can't. You know why? Because they don't know how to be quiet about it. You pass gas around one of your kids, one of them's going to go, I smell poo-poo, Daddy. And you can't blame it on the kids because the adults are hip. Now they're like, That was you, big boy. You got no dignity as a parent? I got a little 4-year-old boy, like I mentioned. He's potty trained, but he don't know how to clean himself yet. So he gets up on that toilet, and after about 5 minutes from across the house, he hears this, Dad, I'm done. Which translates into, wipe my butt. Let me tell you something. You don't got a shred of dignity left in you. When you walk in that bathroom and that boy has assumed the position, you're just like, What happened to me? I used to be kind of cool. You got no privacy when you got kids? I know now why my daddy locked the bathroom door. He wasn't embarrassed about anything. That's just the only time you got to be alone. And even then, you're not alone. Anybody get this? A little hand underneath the door? A little eyeball. Hey, what are you doing, Dad? Hey, Dad, what are you doing? I'm building a rocket, son. Get the hell out of here. Well, I want to see the rocket. No. One morning, I'm taking a shower. I got the bathroom door shut, shower curtain shut. I'm just digging this nice hot shower. All of a sudden, the shower curtain gets ripped back. There's my daughter with her friend. And the last thing I heard was, see? Let me tell you something. You cannot climb a tile wall. Well, I'm a parent. When you do stupid stuff as parents, you try not to, but you eventually do something stupid. I was out in the front yard with my boy the other day, and he was playing with his little friend, and he hit his friend. And I went off to him, and I said, hey, we don't hit. He looked at me like, here's your sign, Dad. These kids got respect for nothing anymore, man. They tear stuff up. They ride on it. You know why? Because nobody disciplines their kids anymore. Everybody's scared if they spank their kids, they're going to go to jail, which is sad, but it's true. Some people still know how to discipline. When they caned that kid over in Singapore, I was singing the Singapore National Anthem that day. I guarantee you he won't spray paint no more cars. I bet he don't even join art class. And if I'd have been his daddy, I'd have gone over to Singapore and I'd have bought that stick. And I'd have nailed it right above his bedroom door. And every time he starts screwing around, I'd be like, hey. Don't make me call Mr. Fuji. Because I will pay his airfare. I'll tell you how bad we've gotten with discipline. The other night, my wife and I went to dinner with this California couple friends of ours. And they're nice people, but they're California parents. When they say stuff like, just let the children express themselves. All righty. That's your boy up on the building with a deer rifle just expressing himself? So we're out to dinner with them. They got a little 4-year-old boy. Now I know boys will be boys, but I got one myself. When I was raised the way y'all were raised, when you went out there with your parents, you could talk and enjoy the conversation, but you didn't act up because you didn't want to hear this. Hey, you want me to take you outside? No, sir, because outside there are no witnesses.
Well, there he is, Bill Engvall. He's a funny man. He's a funny man. He was on that channel, White Trash Radio or whatever it was. I don't know. Yeah, it's Wotan's day here in the bunker. Yeah, and it's raining, and we had just a little teeny spit in the snow this morning. It melted before it hit the ground. Wotan's day, David Lane's favorite day. And don't forget him. He did a hell of a lot of work for the race and did a hell of a lot of time paying for it. Yeah. And we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for the radio show and any other donations you'd like to send along. We don't need to go to the gambling casino or on a cruise, or I don't need to ski in the Alps. But we do have to pay a few bills around here. And we do have our prisoner support forum. You know, we send money to the prisoners. A few deserving. We're not sending them to just any prisoner. You have to have been put in there because of some of your racial activity or something important to the white race as far as we're concerned. And then why don't you get smart and go up to resist.com and see what the daily news is. We call it war surplus. We got it like a ticker tape crawl up there with late news coming on there. Go on up there and download a whole bunch of those books and get smart. You can't defeat your enemy if you're not smart. And I'm going to tell you, too many white people are depending on past racial successes for today. And I'm going to tell you, if you're in school and you're not studying your ass off, a mulatto can come along and be half white and go right past you. Yeah, a lot of people don't talk about that. If a half white or half black or something like that guy, a mulatto, gets the right education and he works real hard, he'll go right past you. So don't count on just being white making a grade for you. Well, as you know, the military-industrial complex is just having a ball in the Middle East. They're testing out all these planes and telling you they're trying to kill ISIS, when they know damn well that just using planes and fighters and bombers can't get rid of anything like that. No guerrilla outfit that has any balls has ever been destroyed by this modern weaponry. Because a true guerrilla army or true guerrilla movement will just keep fighting and keep fighting and keep fighting. They go into the hills, they go into mountains, they go into caves, and then when you get tired of spending money on them, bombing them, and you go home, then they come back out again. So in essence, you can't defeat a fanatical guerrilla force. Because they'll just keep fighting forever. Now, you know and I know the whole thing started by the Soviets invading Afghanistan and then the United States invading Iraq. That's the whole genesis of the thing. And, of course, the military-industrial complexes of both countries love it, those arms makers. Their stock is going up, up, up. And I got a little bit here from Max Kaiser I want to run for you this morning, because he, for a guy who does that kind of work, he nails it right on the head.
Hey, Kaiser Report, I'm Max Kaiser. Ladies and gentlemen, I have right here in this file 70,000 moderate rebels. More war. Shares soar. Because of more war?
More war. Yes, the United Kingdom wants in on the bombing campaign on Syria. Everybody's in it. You know, it reminds me of that game when we were little. Remember before all these advanced technologies emerged, we had a little piece of plastic we would put on the ground, and it had all those various colors. It was like Twister. and everybody, it was a party game. Everybody had to put their hand on a various color. Everybody went in on this war, this bombing campaign against Syria.
It's not like Twister. It is Twister.
It's twisted.
Oh, it's very twisted, because everyone's got a limb here and a limb there, and it's like an orgy of war. It's an orgy of decrepitude.
Of course, you know, the United Kingdom with their two planes think they're going to change anything. You know, the United States is already bombing Syria. France is. Russia is. I think Jordan has struck it a few times. Qatar. Everybody's bombing the country, thinking their bombs are somehow magical. In fact, Michael Fallon, the defense secretary for the United Kingdom, said that they have some sort of magical missiles that never touch civilians.
It's a bull market in death, and UK wants in.
So I was looking at some of the shares. Northrop Grumman Corporation, greatest United States defense contractor, their shares are up 27.8% this year.
That's right. For every 100,000 innocent civilians that are murdered, this one here, Northrop Grumman stock goes up by 5%.
Raytheon and Lockheed Martin are up between 17 and 18% this year. So some of the headlines read that, you know, ISIS has been great for these defense shares.
They're part owners, from what I understand. The ISIS Central Bank is a huge buyer of these defense contractors. It's a no-lose situation.
And, of course, while, you know, the gas oil prices have collapsed over the past year or two, regardless of those cheap oil prices, ISIS themselves own some oil fields, and they don't seem to care so much about the oil price because they are not highly leveraged like the frackers in America. But here is a headline that provoked our next segment because it's quite interesting. Here's a headline from the Daily Mail, and it says, Putin hits ISIS where it hurts. Russia hits more than 200 targets in 24 hours as Moscow aims to cut off jihadist income by taking out refinery and oil trucks. Russia is targeting ISIS-held oil trucks and refineries in bid to cut off the terrorist group's largest source of income. It was recently revealed ISIS was making more than 320 million pounds a year from oil, despite a U.S.-led bombing campaign that the article then goes on to say, you know, United States said they were going to take out ISIS, and yet here they are. They're earning $500 million a year from oil, and that stops, apparently, once Russia hit some of their oil wells and targets.
ISIS is the Exxon of the region. There's a huge oil play. ISIS is to oil what dynamite is to collapsed buildings.
The reason why I point out that Russia has hit these oil targets, and that has been a primary source of income for ISIS, is this past week, Michael Morell, the former deputy director of the CIA, was on PBS's Charlie Rose show, and he was asked, like, by Charlie Rose, why did you never hit their targets? Because Russia's now hitting their income targets.
Oh, really? It was on Charlie Rose?
It was on Charlie Rose. Let's take a look at this clip.
Mm. Attack the funding that they have. Attack the ability to sell the oil. We've seen attacks on that oil transfer taking place now, yeah, after Paris.
Yeah.
That didn't take place,
right,
before Paris, which is your original question.
Right.
So what would be doing now?
So this is one of the collateral damage questions, right? So prior to Paris, there seemed to be a judgment, right? I don't sit in the sit room anymore, but there seemed to have been a judgment that, look, we don't want to destroy these oil tankers because that's infrastructure that's going to be necessary to support the people when ISIS isn't there anymore. And it's going to create environmental damage. And we didn't go after oil wells, actually hitting oil wells that ISIS controls, because we didn't want to do environmental damage and we didn't want to destroy that infrastructure, right?
So we had oil on trucks.
So now we're hitting oil on trucks, right? And maybe you get to the point where you say we have to also hit oil wells. So those are the kind of tough decisions you have to make.
Ha, 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 ha. So, yeah. Well, of course, they're very concerned about the environment, clearly. But no, this is very farcical, isn't it? That environmental concerns stop them from bombing the ISIS oil pipeline, oil delivery system. It makes a mockery of the whole thing. I mean, it's unbelievably cynical.
It's interesting that the CIA is now interested in environmental activism because it's no longer allowed to be an environmental activist, thanks to the fact that intelligently, I think, you know, we're getting rid of our freedoms so that they can't hate us for our freedom. So it gives them less reason to hate us. Because over in Paris right now, we have the COP meeting, the Conference of Parties, as part of the UN climate conference. And, of course, because they're in a state of emergency for the next few months, they're not allowed to protest anything. So their protests were planned, but now they're arresting the protesters. Paris climate activists put under house arrest using emergency laws. One of the people arrested, for example, was Joel Domenjude, who is a legal activist. He was there to advise on the legal aspects for the activists. And he got a call on his cell phone from his neighbors who saying the three floors of his apartment building were filled with riot police. And then he was followed by undercover cops while he was out walking around. And then they brought him back and arrested him. And he says, I feel angry about it because I think they made a big mistake. They weren't looking for people like us activists, or if they were, it shows that they can target people for no reason at all, and our civil liberties are in danger. Duh.
Well, they declared martial law, basically, in Paris, and it's an amazing mix-up of crazy incentives, because you have environmentalism, which of course is one of the reasons why you have huge global pressures on the migration front, and this causes all kinds of problems with border controls and immigration, which increases the civil rights evisceration for groups who end up recruiting those into their terror organizations, who then turn around and bomb cities like Paris. So, meanwhile, the CIA is concerned about the environment. So, I mean, if you simply were to truly be concerned about the environment, were to shut down the carbon-emitting oil conglomerates, including ISIS, and restore some peace and justice, you wouldn't have the terrorist attacks to begin with. But, of course, that would require a way of thinking that would mean that you're cutting off the supply of free money from death merchants, and nobody, Obama or Cameron, will ever, ever shut the spigot of the free death money. Never, ever, ever.
Also this week, we saw that the EU has promised, once they start bombing more heavily in Syria, they're expecting more refugees. So what they've done is given Turkey 3 billion euros in order to deal with the refugees in whatever way, to keep, prevent them from coming over to Europe. Now, on Twitter, I saw Alexis Tsipras, who is the Prime Minister of Greece, start tweeting, and I screen-grabbed them quickly because I knew he would delete them, and sure enough, he did delete them. But he tweeted to the Prime Minister of Turkey, not Erdogan, but Prime Minister Davutoglu, and he said, fortunately, our pilots are not as mercurial as yours against the Russians. Tweet number two, what is happening in the Aegean is outrageous and unbelievable. Number three, we're spending billions on weapons, you to violate our airspace, we to intercept you, hashtag EU Turkey. Four, we have the most modern aerial weapon systems, and yet on the ground, we can't catch traffickers who drown innocent people, EU Turkey. So it seems like he was angry, perhaps, at this 3 billion euros, and that they're talking about Germany has promised Turkey to speed up their accession to the EU if they take all these refugees or deal with them in a way. So it seemed to have provoked Alexis Tsipras. But he deleted those tweets, at least in English. Apparently he kept them up in Greek.
Tsipras didn't understand the game. That if he was more supportive of terrorism, he would have gotten a lot more money from Germany. Obviously, Turkey, because they support terrorists, they just got a 3 billion euro cash infusion and reward for the terrorism, because then a lot of the money goes into these companies that were the free death money. So Tsipras thinks that there's something called Europe. I think he's got a democracy hangover because he's Greek, of course. So he thinks that it's about democracy, or there's about some kind of representational government or some fair or some. He doesn't get it. It's all about killing your neighbor and cashing in, Alexis. Tsipras, get with the program, dude.
Well, of course, just in the first 6 months of this year, there were something like 1,200 violations of Greek airspace by Turkey.
Right. If Tsipras shot down some of those Turkish jets that were violating Greek airspace, Germany would immediately send Greece a billion euros.
Yes.
That's the way to kill people, Alexis Tsipras. We love it. Because we own these stocks. But he's a moron, because he thinks that the game is not death,
But so you mentioned death and terrorism. I want to show this cartoon here because Saudi Arabia has threatened to sue anybody who shows this sort of cartoon or comparison to ISIS. Barbaric death cult, that's ISIS chopping off somebody's head. Here's Saudi Arabia, friend and ally, chopping off. I think they're chopping off 50 people's head in one day this week or in the next week.
Right, so America sends them billions of dollars.
Yeah.
Because the game is death, Alex Tsipras. The game is death. Death is the game, Tsipras. Wake up.
Time for Twister.
Right, you need to get into the orgy of death, Alexis Tsipras.
Yeah.
Get naked. Put olive oil all over your body. And you and Yanis Varoufakis should be in there at the Twister table, all slithering and littering. Look at these Arab people. They would love to get into a Twister, naked oil, olive oil Twister match with you and kill people for the benefit of these defense contractors. What's wrong with you, Alexis Tsipras? Wake the freak up. You
as we talk about more war in Syria, you know, people are forgetting that all these countries, bar Russia, attacked Libya already. And Glenn Greenwald points out on a tweet what a difference 4 years makes in New York Times headlines. Here's the first headline. U.S. tactics in Libya may be a model for other efforts. That was 4 years ago.
That was a model of destruction.
That was August 28th, 2011. Now we know it has descended into chaos and anarchy, and many of the refugees, prophets.
Not the Muhammad prophet, the other one.
And finally, November 20th, 2015, ISIS's grip on Libyan city gives it a fallback option. So now ISIS is starting to take over cities in Libya, and this is the model for Syria.
When is Goldman Sachs going to take ISIS public on the New York Stock Exchange?
Twister! Woo!
Make it Twister, baby. That's what it's all about.
You know, I think Max is almost as crazy as I am, but I don't think he's quite as crazy as I am. I love it. But he brings it right down. It's a military-industrial complex, and look at the earnings. Go to the stock market. Check it out. Every one of these arms makers in this country, these fighter planes and these tank makers and these mines to blow the hands off little kids and everything like that, they're making a fortune in this country. Always have made a lot of money. But now you're going to see a new wave of profits with these outfits because they're gearing up now to internal jihads happening here in the United States. At least that's what they're trying to sell the people. So immediately they're going to redesign a whole lot of equipment that is not specifically for use on the battlefield in the Middle East to be used in the streets of America. And they have to redesign all this equipment and so forth. So there's another big boost to the military-industrial complex, which both the Republicans and the Democrats love because they surely never vote against it, or most of them don't. Almost all Republicans vote for war and increase military budgets, and most of the Democrats do, but some of the Democrats don't, and I commend them for that. No, they're making a big bid with this Cruz guy for president, who's, I guess you'd call him part Hispanic or whatever you want to call him, but he's slick as snake oil, I'll tell you that. And here's a little sample of the bullshit he's putting out about his family and his father's activity during the Cuban problem with Fidel Castro taking over.
It's time to go cruising again. I realize that it can be frightening to travel through the dark, dangerous corridors of Ted Cruz's mind, making stomach-turning hard right turns that suddenly appear without warning. Yet, we must, for this guy intends to be your president. But buckle up, for this trip not only takes us into Ted's mind, but also into the twisting mental curves of his hero, role model, mentor, top advisor, and surrogate campaigner, Rafael Cruz, also known as Daddy. Ted is campaigning as a truth teller and an honest fighter for freedom, regularly using his father's life story as a guidepost to his own integrity. The candidate tells and retells the story that his father first told him as a boy, about how Daddy Cruz had been a courageous rebel leader in Fidel Castro's Cuban Revolution in the 1950s.
Raphael says he ran guns, threw Molotov cocktails, and even survived arrest and torture in the struggle to bring down the right-wing dictatorship of Fulgencio Batista. It's a riveting bit of history that thrills Senator Cruz's audiences and gives emotional power to his political ambition. Indeed, Raphael's Cuban heroics are so inspiring that son Ted features them in his recent campaign book, pointedly titled A Time for Truth. But look out, here's where the high moral road of Raphael's story suddenly washes out, sending his and Ted's integrity spinning off into a deep political ravine. It turns out that practically none of the tales about the father's machismo actions in Cuba actually happened. This is Jim Hightower saying, only a handful of real freedom fighters of that time remember Raphael at all. And none of them recall him doing anything more than strutting around and talking big. In fact, he was known as an ojalatero, one who wished the dictator would fall, but was too squeamish to act on it.
Thank you, Jim Hightower, the big old populist from out there in Texas. I disagree with you on some things, but a lot of things I agree with you on, so keep doing the digging, baby. Yeah, watch out for this Cruz. The big money boys are starting to warm up to Cruz. Watch for his swift ascension with the money behind him. He's also working hard on the Christ Insanity crowd. Boy, they love him. And now let's return to the thrilling days of yesteryear in the Hollywood Ku Klux Klan. I'm telling you, every media paper in the country covers the Klan anytime it drops a recruiting paper on somebody's yard. This is Eaton. I don't know where Eaton's at, but let's see what's going on there. Yeah. Well, it's...
Our family invites your family to the legendary life of the story's Clifton Mill the day after Thanksgiving through January 1st.
I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that.
I'm Natalie Jovanovich here in Eaton. We came out today because we took a couple of calls into our newsroom from some concerned residents because they found these weighted Ziploc bags in their front yard, and inside this flyer, one promoting joining the Ku Klux Klan. The phone number and address on there is based out of North Carolina. So why are those flyers being passed around here? I talked to Eaton police about how many reports they've taken and what they've done. We're also looking to talk to some of those people who found those flyers. Look for our full story tonight at 5 on News Center 7.
Which proves that about every local television station and newspaper has not enough important things to talk about than the Hollywood Klan. They go on and on and on. If you go on the internet and put in the Klan just to search, you're going to get thousands of these that the Klan has dropped a leaflet on somebody's yard. They don't have anything about cutting the war budget or protecting the ecology and the environment. They got none of that stuff, and charging George Bush and the boys with high crimes of treason, none of that stuff. It's just join the KKK. Well, then they join the KKK, then what? Well, we got to get the truck loaded up with more of these and sprinkle them around. So the whole idea of the KKK is to recruit more people to put out more literature that says nothing. If there ever was a false flag operation, it's sure these KKK outfits today. Do you remember back when Alex Haley interviewed George Lincoln Rockwell? And if you've heard the original interview, Rockwell makes Alex Haley look like what he was, just a half-assed black reporter. But in the movie, I forget which one it was, they made him look like a genius, Alex Haley. So anyhow, there's an uproar down in Annapolis. In September 1981, the city of Annapolis unveiled a plaque honoring Kunta Kinte and Alex Haley, who wrote that book about we had that week-long series back in the 80s, remember? About how horrible the white people are. The former was a slave who arrived in Maryland for sale in 1767. The latter was his descendant who wrote Roots and searched for connections to his ancestry. The plaque was divisive when it was installed. It was about bringing people together. Well, that don't sound, says Chris Haley, the late author's nephew and research director for the history of slavery in Maryland at the State Archives. 2 days after it was installed, the plaque was stolen. According to legend, it was thrown into the Ego Alley, where the city is currently repairing the bulkhead, whatever that is. Is it possible workers will find a corroded, muck-caked plaque that has rested at the bottom for more than 30 years? If the 70-pound plaque was thrown into the river, still, and if, it would be difficult for the construction crews to find it because they are working along the edges of the Ego Alley. I guess it's a river, said Rhonda Wardlaw, city spokesman. Well, they'll probably send 15 white men into the river to find it, and they'll all drown. Anyhow, our chances of finding the plaque are much like a needle in a haystack. Well, that's too bad. That interrupts negrophilia. Whoops, wait a minute here. Ripped up from the ground, only a calling card was left behind. You've been patronized by the KKK. Yeah, we put those out by the tens of thousands. The card led many to believe that the white supremacy group, the Ku Klux Klan, had stolen the plaque, although there was the chance that the calling card was used to make the KKK an easy scapegoat. Well, historical records show that the KKK did, in fact, use calling cards. And numerous news reports throughout the country featured the same theme, racially motivated events or crimes and a calling card. But an Annapolis-based Klan organizer denied the organization's role. Well, you should be proud of it. Christ, you get some credit and you don't even take it. You can brag about it and say, hell yes, we did it, and we're glad. And they couldn't put a finger on you at this late date. There's no evidence. But here's a typical Klan. Oh, no, we would never do such a thing. After the theft, the plaque was replaced in November 1981 with a heavy stone-mounted version, which can be seen downtown. Well, where's the KKK now? Why aren't they dumping that in the river? The current memorial features of the second plaque, along with the statue of Alex Haley, reading to three children, a story wall with quotes from Roots, and the compass rose, which points true north. Well, I'll tell you, if you want to know what Alex Haley was really like and what a mischaracter they made of him in the media, just go to find out that it should be up on YouTube, the interview between Alex Haley and George Lincoln Rockwell. Rockwell made him look like an idiot, which he was an idiot, but through the Roots thing that somebody else put together, they have made him such a big, he's a big black hero. Yet the stolen plaque has lingered in the minds of residents. I'll bet it has. I bet if they ask half their kids down there, what do you think about Alex Haley? Who in hell is that? Was it an intense, insensitive prank or a racially motivated crime? Last year, a television show that aired on Arts and Entertainment, H2, a sister to the History Channel, and now known as Vice, attempted to locate the plaque. I think the Klan melted that thing down and made KKK symbols. The show lost history focus, focused on missing and stolen historical artifacts, and featured the plaque interviewing expert and locals about potential whereabouts. You know, before I go on for that, guess what RT's talking about? Last night they had a documentary about Leith, North Dakota again, and that whole thing. They made everybody that lives in Leith like great, wonderful anti-terrorists, warriors for Jesus. They never mentioned me. They mentioned Craig Cobb, so that's good. Brad Meltzer, novelist and host of Lost History, said it was one of his favorite episodes because the missing item was stolen in modern times, increasing the chances of finding it. Lots of tips came in, he said. Meltzer is a best-selling author and television host known for mystery and political novels. Well, that's something else. Quote, there are still people and witnesses around, Meltzer said. Kids will always steal a stop sign, but the fact that this was done by the KKK, once that happens, this is no longer a silly prank, unquote. This is a revolution. And while the plaque hasn't been found, Meltzer and his team are confident they have a good lead. Well, hell, it's buried in my backyard, you stupid bastards. He hopes to tackle that lead in a second season of the show and find the plaque in the process. He wouldn't describe the information. Meltzer, you aren't just trying to make some money, are you? You're not just trying to milk the public. You don't give a shit about that plaque. It is an amazing tip, Meltzer said. Haley said he was glad there was interest in finding the plaque, which he had forgotten all about. If it is found, perhaps the city could return it to its rightful place, or maybe it could be donated to the National Museum of Negrophiliac of African American History and Culture. I would be fascinated and thrilled if they found it, Haley said. My whole family would be thrilled if that was found again, unquote. Well, I have it from a good source that you'll never see that again, boy. Never again. It's impossible. It's gone bye-bye. The original Kunti Kinte, Alex Haley plaque, has been missing for more than 30 years. Do you know where to find the long-lost plaque? Send your tips. Get this, boys and girls. Send them tips. You know, it's in Alaska. It's in Florida. This email, CCOOK, that's C Cook at CAPGAZNEWS.com. That's CCOOK at CAPGAZNEWS.com. And if you know where it's at, get in touch with these people and give them your estimate of where it's at, man. Well, here's some stuff hot off the ticker tape from the Modesto Bee newspaper up in California. What do we know about Donald Trump? He presents himself as a self-made man and an admirer of his maker. The reality is his father, Frederick Trump, was worth $300 million to $400 million at his death in 1999. Donald and his siblings inherited that wealth. What do we know about Frederick Trump? Well, in 1927 in Queens, New York, 21-year-old Fred Trump was arrested as he attended a Ku Klux Klan rally. About 1,000 Klansmen were involved in a riot with 100 New York City police. The riot was started as the police gave permission for the Klan to march in the Memorial Day parade, but without their white sheets. Trump was arrested but never charged. The KKK of Queens was concerned that the Roman Catholic and Jewish immigrants who were arriving in New York City in large numbers from Southern and Eastern Europe after World War I and into the 20s were undesirable. Fred Trump built apartments in Queens and violated federal laws prohibiting discrimination in housing. Donald Trump followed his father by castigating Mexican immigrants. They're not immigrants, asshole, they're invaders. The Chinese and now the Muslims making statements about closing mosques. and creating a database for American Muslims. Well, we don't know for sure why they did that, or why he does that. Is he real, or is he just using that as to get in the news? What do you think? And here's the latest note from National Action in Britain. I'll play it for you, and then we'll comment.
Just as a courageous man can conquer a woman's heart more easily than a coward, a heroic movement will win the hearts of a people sooner than a cowardly movement that survives only through police protection. The Young Party had to uphold its own existence, protect itself, and it had to break the enemy's circle of terror itself.
A little hard to understand just the audio track, so I'll send you the MP3 of it. You can see for yourself. National Action March in Liverpool. Liverpool's sort of the heart of the so-called leftists in race mixers in Britain. So National Action marched right into Liverpool, which is pretty cool. But it reminds me of going back about 25 years when that kind of stuff seemed like the way to go. And we did it all over the country. And then it seemed like maybe running for office was the way to go. And we did that, a few of us. And you see how that ended up. So I hate to be Mr. Negative, but I don't see the end outcome of this. I think the better way would be to have recruited a lot of these lefties and put them over on our side. But see, the problem is that the general positions of the right wing do not lend itself to recruiting people from the left wing. And the reason, because the right wing tends to just back nationalism and back the present system on the money system and so forth, and other things that most young leftists are not going to get involved in. And so I feel bad about it, because there are a lot of good people over there trying to do something. But as far as I'm concerned, I've said over and over, those days are over. Your enemy is the city of London. Your enemy is in the military-industrial complex of Britain. Your enemy is in the parliament and the areas of government. That's who've got to be attacked. Just working-class Liverpool leftists fighting right-wing National Action is not going to go anywhere. You know, if you killed every one of those guys in the Liverpool faction, it wouldn't change anything. It wouldn't change the system. It wouldn't change the rottenness of the city of London and the rottenness of your politicians in England. One thing I noticed, a lot of British guys were going over there to fight with ISIS. Now, talk about being screwed up. That is really screwed up. A lot of them are going to get killed fighting on the side that shouldn't be fought on. So it's, maybe I don't put the words exactly the way they should be, but I'd like to convince British activists, British soldiers, British guerrilla operators, British lone wolves to operate as a guerrilla army, a psychological army. Don't march in the streets. If you got a brief with these guys, just find out where they meet, you know, handle it. Flags are not going to do it. Glenn Parker down there in North Carolina, you had, what, 500 guys marching with flags and camis and everything else. It never went anywhere. It looked good. It sounded good. But it didn't turn out to be anything. They didn't elect one guy into political power position for all that marching. They didn't drag one rotten, crooked politician down from his office and beat him in the street. None of that happened. It all went away. So why do people in Britain and some of the other countries in Europe keep following the same old pattern, which will not win, has not won before? Just Hitler and his boys, if you're a Hitler worshiper, just the Brownsters marching down the street and fighting the communists in the streets, that didn't change anything. No, it was taking power, and taking power the way it has to be taken. You have to twist it out of their hands, and people get hurt. Any kind of move like this, you should not be supporting the system in any way. And the system sits back and loves this. These rotten sons of bitches at the top, so-called right and left, they love this, playing you like fools. I don't know what to say. It's going to keep going, I guess. Many times the people on the left seem to understand this a little bit better than on the right. I don't mean their ideology, but I mean when they go down there to attack, they attack physically and do everything they can to break bones. The right wing tends to, and I know over here, to have the cops protect them from these nuts. You got to learn to crush them. You can't use the cops for cover. In fact, once in a while, I think both the left and the right should both combine for one day to go all against the cops. Try something new. Try something new. When I talk like this, there's a tendency that the right wing always pick up on it and say, Metzger's negative. He's negative. He's cynical. He's this. He's that. Well, if you think that's all I'm saying this for, then I guess you're happy. I guess you're happy. But I'm trying to help build a struggle here and quit playing around with the old-fashioned tricks and trades that never work. In fact, they helped the opposition. There's an Australian politician recently that mistakenly quoted neo-Nazi. Well, you never know who a neo-Nazi is supposed to be, because neo-Nazi is supposed to cover everything the Jews don't like. Anyhow, he deletes all his tweets. His name is Bernardi. Mistakenly quoted a neo-Nazi on the social media platform. Quote, "To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticize," unquote, which is true. That's a very easy way to find out. But he's going to spend the next year, maybe 5 years, apologizing to the Jews. I've just received a whole bunch of pictures from these rallies in Britain that took place, I guess, this last weekend. And it showed here the heart of the National Action demonstrators numbered about 18. I don't know what to say other than that. with hundreds of anti-national action demonstrating against them, and then the cops all there to protect. Who knows? They're there to protect anti-fascist forces. I'm telling you, boys, it don't work. And when you try something over and over again with the same results, well, you know the bottom line. But if you really want to have a tussle over this, set up a deal someplace where there's no cops, nobody, you know, and suck them into something. And if you want to brawl, brawl. You may get smashed, but you may not. In street action, if you don't send the other side home bleeding and broken, you don't win anything. This is a reason not to have tattoos. Quit getting these racial tattoos. Neo-Nazi shocks pool visitors with offensive concentration camp tattoo. This was Oranienburg, and I guess it was in East Germany. A man with an extremely offensive tattoo of a concentration camp has been kicked out of a water park in the East German town of Oranienburg. So anyhow, what are you going to do? Incidentally, the guy wearing this concentration camp tattoo had plenty of room to put it on his back because he must weigh about 250 pounds of blubber. When are Aryan fighters going to learn to get in shape and not walk around with big old pot bellies and fat hanging all over them? It says here the police in Germany are madly searching for a man with a large tattoo of Auschwitz after he was photographed at a public swimming pool. Chase that guy across Germany. Get Interpol on it, man. He had a tattoo. Well, I see they're at it again. Last week there were reports from concerned citizens that a white power rally was planned to take place in Ballard on December 6th. Now, I'm not quite sure where Ballard is at. It's up in the northwest someplace. On a white supremacy forum, stormfront.org, there was a post that stated there would be a large party in Ballard that would attract 300 Northwest Hammerskin members. Northwest Hammerskins are a local chapter of the white supremacy hate group that represents Washington, Idaho, Oregon, Montana, and North Dakota. The post stated that the rally would start in Ballard and then move to Capitol Hill for after a traditional cross burning and performance by white power bands. The post also stated that the event would be a day of camaraderie, music, hailing our heroes, and good old goose-stepping. The address was not disclosed, but the post said the location of the event would be announced the same day. Last week, The Stranger reported that the Hammerskins celebrated what they called Martyrs' Day on the first weekend of December every year, typically on Saturday. The occasion is marked to commemorate the death of Robert J. Matthews. That's a good thing. A founding member of a white terrorist group called the Order, who was killed on Whidbey Island in 1984 during a standoff with the FBI. Well, it was more than the FBI. The military was there. The Navy was there. Everybody was there to get in on the kill. This will be the biggest event in Northwest history as of yet. So let's put the beautiful Pacific Northwest back on the map and make Robert Matthews proud, stated the Post. The Post went on to use discriminatory language to discuss how the group wants to show the community that they are here and here to stay. Since last week, the Post has been taken down. Seattle Police Department reported that they are aware of the Post and are reviewing its legitimacy. And are going to be there, man, spying on everybody, taking down your license plate number. Yeah, right, yeah, okay. Okay. Well, anyhow, keep an eye out up there in the Northwest for the big, giant, white, racial get-together. Don't forget to bring your beer. The name of the paper that this came out of was the BallardNewsTribune.com. Well, that's it for today, boys and girls. I'll be back tomorrow on Thursday. I'm not sure. We might be a little late tomorrow. I don't know. I have to go someplace. But we will have a show tomorrow, no matter what. So 14-5 and shut up. And if you want to go to rallies and expose yourself and your license plates and your situation to all those federal agents, be my guest. But don't cry to me when you get slammed into a jail or prison. I can't help you then.
ELS. That's right, folks. ELS. That's right, folks. C for comedy. A for Abbott. M for Maxwell. E for Ennis. L for Lou Costello. Put them all together and they spell Camel. Experience is the best teacher. Try a Camel. Let your own experience tell you why more people are smoking Camels than ever before. And draw up a chair for tonight's Camel Show, starring Bud Abbott and Luke Costello.
Hey, Emmett. What are you writing on that pad?
I'm just making out a list of girls I'm going to kiss next week. Here's who I got picked out. Lizzie Schwartz, Maggie Mugglemeyer, Tessie Tinfoil, Lana Turner.
Now, wait a minute. Lana Turner wouldn't kiss you.
Oh, no?
Oh, no.
Then I'll scratch her off my list.
I love you. You dummy, always thinking of girls. Girls, girls, girls. A great men don't waste their time on girls. Where do you suppose Benjamin Franklin would have been if he'd have thought of girls all of the time?
In the front row at Earl Carroll's?
No. Costello, I've been telling you for the past 3 weeks. You've got to quit chasing girls and get yourself a job. Look at you. Look how sloppy you are. Look at your socks.
I can't help my socks, Abbott. It's those new Hickok plastic garters.
What's the matter with them?
Your stock socks stay up, but your legs fall down.
Yeah.
Telegram for Luke Costello.
Here, boy.
Out of the way, fatso. I'm looking for Luke Costello.
Boy, he is Luke Costello.
The famous Luke Costello. The one and only Luke Costello.
Yes.
That's me. Jay, I listen to you on the radio every Thursday night. You break me up when you say, how do you do?
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. That ain't me. That's the mad Russian.
You're saying? Who's going to take this telegram?
I'll take it.
It's collect $14.
He'll take it. Don't give it to me. Here, boy. Hey, Costello, this telegram is from Joe DiMaggio. Listen to this. Dear Lou, as you know, I am recovering from a foot operation. I would appreciate you taking my place on New York Yankees until I recover. Please report to the Yankee Stadium immediately. Signed, Joe DiMaggio.
Abbott. Hey, that's one news. That's the news I've been waiting for. I'm going to be a big league ball player.
Yes.
DiMaggio probably heard about my playing with the Cucamonga Wildcats last year.
You a ball player? I don't believe it, Costello. You know nothing about ball.
Oh, no. I eat baseball. I live baseball. All night when I'm asleep, I dream about baseball.
Don't you ever dream about girls?
What, and miss my turn up at bat?
Oh! What's the matter with you?
Yes. And another thing, Abbott. What page are you on?
Never mind what page you're on.
And another thing, Abbott. Not only that, in Paterson, New Jersey, I worked out with a baseball team. I used to stay out till 4 o'clock in the morning.
Why did you stay out till 4 o'clock in the morning?
This was a girls' baseball team.
Costello, if you're going to play with the New York Yankees, you really have to know something about big league baseball, Lou.
I know all about baseball.
All right, suppose there's a left-handed pitcher pitching. What do?
I put in a right-handed batter.
Now, suppose there's a right-handed pitcher pitching.
I put in a left-handed batter.
But now I trick you. I take out the right-handed pitcher and put in a left-handed pitcher.
Then I double-cross you. I take out my left-handed batter and put in a right-handed batter.
Now, wait a minute. Where are you getting all those right-handed batters?
The same place where you're getting all those left-handed pitchers.
No.
Hello, Bud. Hello, Lou. It's Honey.
It's Marilyn Maxwell.
Hello, Marilyn. I've got great news. I'm going to play ball with the New York Yankees. I'm taking you along as a pitcher.
Oh, now, Costello, Marilyn Maxwell can't pitch.
Oh, no? You should see all the guys she struck out that were trying to get the first base.
Ah, no.
This kid
Kate has got some nice curves.
Oh, Louis, you're so sweet. But I do hope you be careful. You know, big league baseball is a very dangerous game.
Oh, what's dangerous about baseball, Marilyn?
Well, I read in the paper this morning that in the opening game in Boston, 5 players died on base.
Marilyn, you don't seem to know much about baseball. Let me show you how to play indoor baseball. First, I put my left arm around your waist. Then I snuggle my head on your shoulder like this. Then I press my cheek against your cheek.
Oh, wait a minute, Costello. That's not the way to play indoor baseball.
How do you like that? Every season, new rules.
Well, goodbye and good luck, Louis. I just know you'll become famous with those New York Yankees.
Marilyn's right, Costello. This is your chance to become famous. Now, you've got a good job as a baseball player. And you might find your proper niche in life.
Yes, I might. I mean, after all, if I find my... What will I find?
A niche, a niche. You'll find your niche.
Abbott, when I find an itch, I scratch it.
No. What in the world are you talking about?
An itch. I once had the 7-year itch.
What happened?
I scratched real fast and got rid of it in 3.5 years.
Well, I'm not talking about that kind of an itch. I mean an itch in life. A niche in life is what everyone is looking for. Anyone who is successful has found a niche.
Well, if that's the case, I know an Airedale that is doing very well.
Listen to me, Costello. When I say an itch, I don't mean an itch like you have when you have an itch. I mean an itch like you have when you have a notch.
Oh, you don't mean an itch like an itch when you have an itch. You mean an itch like you have when you have a notch.
Now you've got it.
Now I've got it.
Recent nationwide survey, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette.
3 leading independent research organizations asked this question of 113,597 doctors. What cigarette do you smoke, doctor? The brand named most was Camel. Now, you probably enjoy rich, full flavor and cool mildness in a cigarette just as much as doctors do. And that's why, if you're not a Camel smoker now, try a Camel on your T-zone. That's T for taste and T for throat. Your true proving ground for any cigarette. See if Camel's rich flavor of superbly blended choice tobaccos isn't extra delightful to your taste. See if Camel's cool mildness isn't in harmony with your throat. See if you, too, don't say, Camels suit my T-zone to a T.
Well, Costello, I'm going to New York with you. You know, Bucky Harris, the Yanks manager, gave me a job as coach for as long as you're on the team.
Look, Abbott, if you're a coach, you must know all the players.
I certainly do.
Well, you know, I never met the guys, so you'll have to tell me their names, and then I'll know who's playing on the team.
Oh, I'll tell you their names, but you know, strange it may seem, they give these ballplayers nowadays very peculiar names.
Funny names?
Strange names, pet names, like Dizzy Dean and...
His brother Daffy.
Daffy Dean.
I'm their French cousin.
French?
Gouffet.
Gouffet Dean, oh, I see. Well, let's see, we have on the bags, we have who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
That's what I want to find out.
I say, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
Are you the manager?
Yes.
You're going to be the coach, too?
Yes.
And you know the fellow's name?
Well, I should.
Well, then who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the fellow's name? The guy on first.
Who?
The first base.
Who?
The guy playing
first.
Who
is on first?
I'm asking you who's on first.
That's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
That's it.
That's who?
Yes.
Well, you got a first baseman?
Certainly.
Who's playing first?
That's right.
When you pay off the first baseman every month, who gets the money?
Every dollar of it.
All I'm trying to find out is the fellow's name on first base.
Who?
The guy that gets the
That's
money.
That's it.
Who gets the money on
he
first
base? He does, every dollar. Sometimes his wife comes down and collects it.
Whose wife?
Yes.
Look, what I want to know is when you sign up the first baseman, how does he sign his name to
Who?
The contract? The guy.
Who?
How does he sign his
That's
name?
That's how he signs it.
Who?
Yes.
All I'm trying to find out is what's the guy's name on first base?
No, what is on second base?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
One base at a time.
Well, those things are players.
I'm not changing nobody.
Take it easy, buddy.
I'm only asking you, who's the guy on first base?
That's right.
Okay.
All right.
Name on first base.
No, what is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know.
Oh, he's on third. We're not talking about him.
How did I get on third base?
Why, you mentioned his name.
If I mention a third baseman's name, who did I say is playing third?
No, who's playing first?
What's on first?
What's on second?
I don't know.
He's on third.
There I go. Back on third again.
All right,
now who's playing third base?
Why do you insist on putting who on third base?
What am I putting on third?
What is on second?
You don't want who on second.
Who is on first?
I don't know. Third base. Oh, you got outfield?
Sure.
The left fielder's name.
Why?
I just thought I'd ask.
Well, I just thought I'd tell you.
Now tell me who's playing left field.
Who is playing first?
I'm not. Stay out of the infield. I want to know what's the guy's name in left field.
Oh, what is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on
who's
second.
Who's on first?
I don't know. Third base.
Why?
Because.
Oh, he's center field.
He's center field.
As well as
Dallas.
Look. You got a pitcher on a team.
Sure.
The pitcher's name.
Tomorrow.
You don't want to tell me today?
I'm telling you,
then
man.
Go ahead.
Tomorrow.
What time?
What time what?
What time tomorrow you going to tell me who's pitching?
Now listen, who is not pitching?
I'll break your arm, you say. Who's on first? I want to know what's the pitcher's name.
What's on second?
I don't know.
Third base.
The catcher's name.
Today.
And tomorrow's pitcher.
Now you've got it.
All we got is a couple of days on the field. I'm a catcher, too.
No, they don't.
I get behind the plate, do some fancy catching. Tomorrow's pitching on my team, and a heavy hitter gets up.
Yes.
Now, the heavy hitter bunts the ball. When he bunts the ball, me being a good catcher, I'm going to throw the guy out of first base, so I pick up the ball and throw it to who?
Now, that's the first thing you've said right.
I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Well, that's all you have to do.
You should throw the ball to first base.
Yes.
Now, who's got it?
Naturally.
I throw the ball to first base, somebody's got to get it. Now, who has it?
Naturally.
Who?
Naturally.
Naturally?
Naturally.
So I pick up the ball and I throw it to naturally.
No, you don't. You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
That's different.
That's what I say.
You're not saying that.
I throw the ball to naturally.
You throw it to who?
Naturally.
That's it.
That's what I said.
That's it. You ask me.
I throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
Now, you ask me.
You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
That's it.
Same as you.
Don't say to the
right. Same as you. I throw the ball to who? Whoever it is drops the ball and the guy runs a second.
Yes.
Who picks up the ball and throws it to what? What throws it to, I don't know. I don't know, throws it back to tomorrow. Triple play.
Yes.
Another guy gets up and it's a long fly ball to be caught. Why? I don't know. He's on third and I don't give a darn.
What?
I said I don't give a darn.
Oh, that's our shortstop.
I mean, it is.
Cigarettes sent a total of more than 150 million free camels to our fighting men overseas. Now free camels are sent to servicemen's hospitals instead. This week, the camels go to Veterans Hospital, Fort Lyon, Colorado, USAAF Station Hospital, Davis-Monthan Field, Tucson, Arizona, U.S. Naval Hospital, Quantico, Virginia, U.S. Marine Hospital, Baltimore, Maryland, and Veterans Hospital, Palo Alto, California. Camel broadcasts go out to the United States 3 times a week. Our rebroadcast to practically every area in the world where our men are still stationed, and to our good neighbors in Central and South America. And now back to Bud.